Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money on our first show of 2016. And Doug Wells is back in the building.
Good to be back.
After 2 weeks of skiing, teaching skiing, and otherwise enjoying the holidays, I want to thank the co-hosts we had on and in your absence, and welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back. And it was good to see Park City running so smoothly at full capacity the last 2 weeks.
And yeah, and you survived the cold. You were out there
the cold,
every day.
The snow.
Oh, it was quite a week, but fun to now get back in the routine of the new year. And interesting show today. It's going to be a pretty full show. We're adding a few items late, and the first thing we're going to talk about is a new book out this month by Bruce Tulgan called Bridging the Soft Skills Gap, How to Teach the Missing Basics to Today's Young Talent. And I think this sort of goes under the classification of what's wrong with these kids today.
That's right.
Which people have been saying for no doubt centuries. But Bruce has some solid ideas on what some of the soft skill shortfalls are of today's people coming out of college and going into business, and ways to fix what they're missing.
And then on a cold winter week, nothing is better than a little bit of tapas and wine, and we're going to have Paola Bello on. She is a proprietor of Bodegos on Main Street, which is a tapas and wine bar. And then our final guest, we're going to talk about a company called Elevated Future, which is coaching for high school kids to help them get into the colleges and the careers that they want. We're going to have a couple guests on, Brittany Schumacher, Jess Horton, and Rachel Kleinschnitz. And they started this company called Elevated Future, which does that coaching.
Very fine. And we will be back to start Mountain Money. Let me tell you what the weather is looking like. It's a little warmer today than it has been in the last week. We're going to be up to about 31 degrees, 21 tonight. So we have double-digit lows, which is a pleasant change. And it's going to be around 30 all week long, and just a slight chance of brush buys of snow. So we'll be back to talk about today's generation entering the business workforce after this.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We are on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have Bruce Tulgan on the line with us. Let me tell you a little bit about Bruce. He's the founder and CEO of Rainmaker Thinking, a management research and training firm, and also does training online with an online training company, advises business leaders around the world, speaks to business groups, teaches seminars, and has written several books, the latest of which is Bridging the Soft Skills Gap, How to Teach the Missing Basics to Today's Young Talent. Welcome to Mountain Money, Bruce.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you, too. And I said not totally joking in the introduction that it seems every generation says, what's the matter with this next generation coming up? Maybe the cavemen were saying it about their kids. I don't know, but let's talk about this, and you call them Generation Z.
Yeah, these are the second wave millennials, the young people who are coming into the workplace today. We hear a lot about the millennials, but it's a very big cohort. And the young people coming into the workplace today are second wave millennials, or we call them Generation Z. And you're right. We've been tracking young people in the workplace for 23 years now. And kids today, what's the matter with kids today? Part of it is just that they're young. But the other part of it is that times change. And there are real generational differences. And over the 23 years we've been tracking young people in the workplace, there has been this growing issue hiding in plain sight, which is that, you know, young people, they come in with lots of energy and enthusiasm and new ideas and ambition and lots of great new technical skills, especially if they're coming out of school. But what older, more experienced people have been telling us for years, and it's getting worse and worse, is that young people, they may have the newfangled tricks, but they lack a lot of the old-fashioned basics.
Well, let's talk about what those skills. Yeah, what are some of those basics? Lay the foundation for us.
Yeah, well, the easiest to tune into is people skills. Interpersonal communication, and that's, we call it professionalism, and it's self-awareness, it's personal responsibility, it's basic work habits, it's attitude, but probably the most vivid thing that people can identify with is interpersonal communication, you know, face-to-face communication, and young people have been showing up in the workplace, missing a lot of these old-fashioned basics.
It would seem to me that if I did a quick analysis of what's going on, especially with Generation Z, it all comes down to devices. It comes down to everybody's got an iPhone, an iPad, an iPod in their ears. They're disconnected from the social world and hooked on devices.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. One of the biggest, and this is where you can see, right, that yes, kids today, young people are always young and by definition less mature because they're less experienced. But, you know, there's a good example of a real generational difference. It didn't used to be that young people grew up attached to handheld supercomputers. That is new. And that is part of the generational shift that's going on. People of all ages are attached to their devices now, but today's young people, they learned how to think, learn, and communicate using these devices, and it's having a huge impact on their ability to communicate. Their ability, you know, they can write a text, but they can't write a memo. They can send an emoticon, but they can't look somebody eyeball to eyeball and have a good conversation. And by the way, it's also, I think, one of the big factors behind why so many older, more experienced people say that young people aren't good at critical thinking or problem solving. And again, with the device, you know, you can find the answer to any question instantly. So they've never had to puzzle through a problem, really think on their feet. And this is another one of the old-fashioned basics that hiring managers tell us are missing in today's young talent.
So Bruce, you mentioned in your book, and I should say on the onset, I've got two teenage daughters, one that just qualifies as the Gen Z, born in 2000. And I'm actually quite impressed with the next generation. So I'm not 100% on board with the basic premise that these soft skills are missing. But let's take that as a given for the sake of today's discussion and talk about, you say in your book, it's not enough for a manager to lead by example and to show these skills. It's not enough to talk to the young people about, hey, you need to arrive to work on time. You need to take relatively, you know, modest amounts of time for break. You know, you need to have that discipline. It's not enough to just tell them that. It's not enough to show them that. What should managers do?
Well, I look at the United States Marine Corps as maybe the best example of an organization that teaches young people the old-fashioned basics in a very rigorous manner. Now, they have a 13-week onboarding program. Perhaps you've heard of it. And they're able to make people do push-ups in the sand at 4 a.m., and that does help a lot. But you don't need to have your own boot camp. Look, you mentioned your children, and my view is there are some parents and teachers and counselors who are sending young people into the workplace better prepared than the majority of their peers. But part of the problem is the way parents and teachers and counselors nowadays are treating kids. They're not teaching the old-fashioned basics, and they're not holding them to a high standard. And so what we tell managers is, you know, sometimes, okay, you may not have your own boot camp, but you need to take seriously when you're onboarding new employees. You need to make them aware. You need to make them care. You need to give them opportunities to energize their own self-building and self-directed learning that they love to do using their handheld devices. So point them to good resources. Teach them those old-fashioned basics. Give them a chance to practice those old-fashioned basics in the workplace. And then you got to keep track and you got to coach them and teach them. Sometimes we call this in loco parentis management, you know, because it's such a close style teaching, coaching, almost like parenting. And in some ways, it's because, you know, nowadays, most parents, they tell their kids all styles are equally valid. Whatever you think, say, or do, that's just great. Everyone gets a trophy. Now, my view is parents who are holding their kids to a high standard and teaching them the old-fashioned basics, they're doing them a huge favor. But what managers have to realize is young people, they may have a lot to offer and in-demand technical skills and a huge amount they bring to the table. So don't be put off 100% just because they're missing the old-fashioned basics. Sometimes as a manager, you have to do your own mini boot camp, and you have to teach them what nobody has taught them so far, but you have to treat it as a real element of performance. Hey, this is important. This is going to make you valuable wherever you go. If you let me teach you these things, and if you practice these things at work, you're going to be more valuable to us, and you're going to be more valuable anywhere you go.
Well, you say people are being counseled differently and taught differently and all of that, but surely business schools are getting feedback from employers that, hey, the kids you're sending us are technically great, but socially not so great. I mean, don't business schools recognize that they're sending out kids into the workforce that are lacking the soft skills?
Well, they are starting to get these messages from employers. And so some schools and some parents, you know, are starting to realize that maybe it's time to shift the pendulum in the other direction. Maybe not all styles are equally valid. The thing is that a lot of schools, you know, they're very PC. So, you know, it's as if telling somebody to say please and thank you, show up on time, and sort of do your job without asking too many questions, to dress properly and, you know, to meet deadlines and to interact with people in an old-fashioned, polite manner, that somehow this is, you know, hey, that's not my style, is what today's young people are saying. And the schools are caught between, remember that the students are their customers. And part of the customer service revolution is that schools treat kids like customers now. And, you know, customers, the customer's always right. So schools are in a tough spot, although you're absolutely right. Some schools are getting the message, and they are starting to emphasize these old-fashioned soft skills more again.
So, Bruce, I want to go back to the disclaimer that I made earlier saying, you know, I'm not 100% on board with the issue that kids are less effective today. Is there any data that you've done that maybe tracks over time? Is the problem the same today as it was 30 years ago, or is it worse? And what kind of data do you have that gives you that sense one way or the other?
Yeah, the problem has been growing for years. We've been tracking this for 23 years now in our data. We've had well over 200,000 managers participate in our research over the last 23 years. And so this particular finding is based on our tracking of what hiring managers say about the new young people who are coming in as their new young employees.
You know, the irony is the folks that you interviewed today, you know, 10 years ago, they were the incoming new generation that their managers were complaining about. So, you know, I think we all go through this learning curve, and Park City's a town. We're a tourist destination, obviously. It's a big service economy, whether it's the ski resorts or the restaurants. There's a big service component. So there are a lot of young people being hired into that. You gave an example earlier about the Marines. Your book also has an example about Disney. They employ a lot of young people. How does a firm like Disney do it? How do firms that are doing it well, what are they doing that the rest of us should know about?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right that smart employers that rely extensively on young people, and the Marines are an example, Disney is another good example, I take it as a proof point that they have been dedicating more and more of their resources in onboarding and up-to-speed training to emphasizing these old-fashioned basics. So, you know, a lot of things one used to take for granted, how to get to work on time. They teach them that now. They teach them how to break down their morning and budget their time. And how to take account of variables so that they get to work on time. They teach them replacement words for curse words and practice saying dagnabbit, gee whiz, jolly gosh. They teach them to say please and thank you. They teach them how to dress properly, not just wear the uniform, but how to wear it so that it looks clean and pressed, and it doesn't look like you've worn it 3 days in a row. They teach them basic things like respect for context, that, hey, this person who's been here for 5 years, the reason she's in charge is because it matters that she's been here for 5 years. Here's why that matters. They teach them respect for authority. Not to worry. This person's not higher in the eyes of God. Just here at work, right? So you don't have to be insulted that this person is giving you instructions. Be grateful that this person is giving you instructions because he or she is helping you do your job smarter, faster, and better. So, you know, that's why I call it the old-fashioned basics, teamwork. You know, when you grow up in an environment where all styles are equally valid, where everyone gets a trophy, every kid has an individual learning plan, teamwork becomes a little more complicated. You know, my kind of baseball has five outs, and I always want to play shortstop. Well, you know, sorry, it's a team. And on this team, you play left field, and no, three outs. That's all there. That's all you get. Three strikes, and you're out. Three outs, and we change team. You know, one team goes back in the dugout, and the other one goes back out on the field. So they're teaching the old-fashioned basics. They drill the old-fashioned basics. They keep score. They give feedback. I'll give you another example, Enterprise Rent-A-Car. They're great at teaching the old-fashioned basics. And there are a lot of organizations that depend on young talent. They're learning this lesson. And look, part of it is the Marines are not the only place you can get great young people who have stronger soft skills.
In fact, Bruce, wouldn't you agree that, you know, in the case of the Marines, you know, one of the things the Marines have done well is they've created a culture where you don't have to be a superstar coming in to be a high performer coming out. And I like your example of Enterprise Rent-A-Car, because when I've rented from them in the past, you do feel the difference. You feel that each of those employees really cares and is really giving 110%. And I've actually talked to some of the employees, and they actually said that Enterprise, from a hiring standpoint, typically doesn't go after the top people in the class. They're going after the folks that, you know, really worked hard, wanted to be at the top of the class, but just weren't able to do it for whatever reason. But they have that fire in the belly. How important is kind of the inputs versus the culture versus the process that takes place during this indoctrination for the company? How important is the input, the, you know, hiring the top of the top, the best of the best, versus creating folks and creating an atmosphere where it's easy for an average person to succeed?
Yeah, my view is that you cannot hire your way around this. And sometimes when you hire the best of the best, they're the ones with the worst attitude. Because they think, yeah, you really need me. You wanted me to done the best of the best. So you know what? I'll show up a little late. And I don't like to say please and thank you. But rather, when you hire people and give them an opportunity to get better, this is a chance for you to, for effort is what makes the difference. So I do think hiring is very important. I think the most important thing about hiring is knowing who you're trying to hire. You know, so maybe you're hiring Eagle Scouts, not just Marines, or people who almost made it to Eagle Scout, or, you know, Chick-fil-A is another example of an organization that tries very hard to hire people from the community who have demonstrated involvement in certain community activities. So there are ways to select people. It's not necessarily the top of the class, but you can select people who have been trained in the old-fashioned soft skills, either through an activity, through a school that emphasizes these things, through a prior employer that emphasizes these things. But my view is that you said the word culture. I think in an organization, you have to create a culture where it's cool, you know, to say please and thank you and show up early and stay late and dress appropriately and make custom, go the extra mile every step of the way. You know, and that starts at the bottom and at the top, and it's at every level. It's a respect for authority. It's leaders who are not afraid to be strong, highly engaged, teaching style managers, and who are not afraid to teach followership. You know, a lot of young people, nobody's ever taught them how to follow. And so young people who have been on a team for a long time or, you know, been part of an organization where they teach followership, they teach these old-fashioned basics, that's a good hiring shortcut. But my view is there's no substitute for having the culture where it's clear these things matter, where managers emphasize these things, where they keep track of these things, and where the peer culture supports this kind of emphasis of the old-fashioned basics.
Yeah, Bruce, so this is Generation Z you're talking about, so we need to wrap things up now, but you know, what's the next generation? Do we go back to A? And what's Generation Z going to be saying about Generation A? The same thing 10 years from now?
Well, no doubt they'll be saying, kids today. You know, when I was a kid, nobody knew how to fly. But I don't know what's coming next. I'm not a futurist. What we do is, you know, the youngest people we're interviewing are 16, because they're the youngest people in the North American workforce. We interview young people, and we interview their managers. We've been doing that for 23 years. And what I do is, you know, I report on what we're finding to our clients and try to help them with the best solutions we can identify.
Well, Bruce, we thank you for coming in, this being on air with us this morning. Our guest has been Bruce Tolgan. He is the author of Bridging the Soft Skills Gap. Bruce, I see the picture on the back flap of your book. You look like a young man, so maybe Larry in 10 years we'll have Bruce back and see what we're saying about kids today.
Thank you so much. Well, believe it or not, I'm almost 50.
All right. Well, great. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Now, thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Now, when we come back, there was some news this morning regarding an FDA or USDA recall of some Jaffel's products, Jaffel's based in Park City. So we will get an update on that story with the owner of Jaffel's, Merrill Vander Merwe, and we will be back with her after this. Thanks.
Hi, this is Blake Christian of HCVT CPAs. We are very pleased to support KPCW and to be providing full-service tax, audit, and financial consulting services to the Park City region through our newest office in Old Town. Learn more at hcvt.com.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085. JonesWaldo.com.
Meryl Vander Merwe is in the studios with us. She's been here before because she has founded a small business that she's making bigger every day. Jaffel's, the pocket sandwiches, you may have had them. They are available in Park City now at several locations. But Meryl, you've been in the news for the wrong reasons, and we wanted to find out, get to the bottom of a recall of your product, 235 pounds of ready-to-eat pocket sandwich products. And I guess the first thing to emphasize is this is a voluntary recall. You're the one who initiated it. So what happened in the manufacturing process?
Well, first of all, thanks for letting me come on so quickly to explain the voluntary recall that we just did on New Year's Eve. So first of all, I think it's important for people to understand that we've worked a year now to be able to get our local facility in Silver Creek to be a USDA certified plant. What that means is we can then sell product wholesale to grocery stores and so forth. So when you decide to make that step and go under that level of intensity, you actually have an inspector on site 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday during your operating hours, which is awesome. And it's great because ultimately it protects the consumer, but it also protects the brand. So when we decided to do this voluntary recall, it was an internal sort of process that happens when the inspector checks all your logging system. And our very, very first batch that we had done under USDA certified lacked the, to not be too technical, but lacked the third temperature on our logging box. So the recall is based off lack of documentation, not food handling. And I think that that's going to be really important for people to understand. It was classified as low risk. It's not going to make anybody sick. We decided to recall the product. And in fact, there's at this classification level, there's actually a mechanism in place where if we would like to, we could actually have the product tested and resell it. So I want people to understand that this is a documentation, lack of documentation issue rather than a food
handling. And it had to do with the documentation of as the product was cooled from the cooking temperature mm-hmm. to the freezing or refrigeration
yeah,
temperature.
Correct. When we decided that the product froze really well and that we wanted to expand on the wholesale side of the market, we follow an extremely intense process, which is our HACCP plan, which is designed. And if you deviate in any way, shape, or form, the inspector will pick it up, and there are consequences. So it is extremely intimidating. You feel the energy when you're actually in the facility the days that the inspector's there. And, you know, we wear white smocks, and we have hair nets, and it's the highest. It's even higher than FDA because you're working with meat product. And it's actually all these programs and all these systems are in place to protect not just the company but the consumer. And it is for the safest, food level in the world.
So you just to make sure that everybody understands, I'm going to paraphrase what I've heard you say mm-hmm. just to make sure I've got it right. You internally have a process that mm-hmm. you follow. You probably filed that with USDA. They said, yes, this looks good. To the best of your knowledge, you followed that process. You just don't have the documentation where you can point to it and say, there's where we signed off on each and every one of those steps. Is that correct? But to the best of your knowledge, those steps were followed.
Yeah, the steps were, there are many, many steps. We actually have two files that are about, 5 inches thick, full of documentation, which is our HACCP plan, which took us over a year to get all those systems in place and to get us signed off. We were just recently signed off in November. So when this particular batch that we recalled was under production, we'd followed those steps from receiving throughout the entire CCP, the cooking, cooling. And on the last step, we had gone through the critical control points. We had proof that we have documented those correctly, which is why this was a voluntary recall. It was not classified as a class one recall where it's going to make people sick. Thank goodness, because we had the correct documentation. We just left the product in the freezer, which we could not prove.
Well,
so
Meryl,
that extra 20 yeah. minutes was really why we decided to do the recall.
Well, I think people, consumers, will be reassured that a USDA is in place to make sure everything is done right, and that B, your company, went the extra mile and and self-reported an issue and issued your own recall without waiting or without being ordered to recall, which is a voluntary recall always best. And we wish you well with the business. Just very quickly, how are you doing since your launch?
We're doing great. We're really, really excited about the next phase of the product. We're hoping to kind of penetrate the market with this new wholesale. We have some great plans for 2016, and we just are looking for local support to just continue to help spread the word and help take us to that next level.
Okay, Meryl Vander Merwe, president, founder of Jaffels. Thanks for coming in, clarifying the voluntary recall that you're
Thanks again, guys.
Now under.
You Thank bet. You for having me.
And we will be back to talk about food in a different way, the new Tapas and Wine Bar on Main Street. We'll be back with that after this.
This is Brooks, commercial lender for Mountain West Bank. We are proud to support Mountain Money on KPCW, but not responsible for the opinions of Larry or Doug. Our community is unique, and so are Park City businesses. We offer loan solutions to help your business succeed. Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theaters. 649-3369, Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Hello, I'm Rick Redford.
And I'm Gordo Cummins with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
We provide transportation to the airport, Park City, Deer Valley, and all other Utah resorts, utilizing private black cars, SUVs, and vans.
Reservations at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We're going to switch gears now. We're going to talk about tapas and wine. There's a new restaurant at on Main Street, 710 Main Street. It's called Bodegos on Main, and its owners are Paola and Pamela Bodego.
Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us why you decided to open this restaurant and why Park City?
So we've been in Park City for many years. We own Buena Vita Restaurant. So we are used to restaurant business. And we went to Spain and we love the food. And so we got inspired to, with the food there, to have something like this. And we thought Park City doesn't have anything where you have tapas, so small plates and wine, and you can go with friends and all share and talk, and so that's how we decided to start this.
So describe some of the dishes, some of the best sellers, and the price points of them.
The tapas range in between $8 to $15. And the main courses are in the middle 30s. And the main courses you can share, they are like a meat platter and a paella and stuff like that that more than one people can eat. And all the tapas usually people share. And the most popular tapas are like the piquillo with crab filling. So it's like a piquillo pepper with crab inside, patatas bravas. We have calamari, octopus. All those are the most sellers.
And how long have you been open? And give us an idea of where on Main Street 710 is.
So we've been open for a little less than a month, but we opened before it got really busy. So
that's kind of a scary time to open, isn't it? Open right before the big crowds hit.
Yes. So we can get used to the workings and everybody can get trained. So we open a little bit after Thanksgiving. And we are down on Main Street.
Next to Aushi, 710 Main Street, on the Marriott Plaza.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. And how were you, your other restaurants on Main Street as well, if I'm correct? Did you think about opening off Main Street as well, or were you committed from the beginning to doing this on Main Street?
We find this location in Main Street and we loved it, so we decided to open there. But we always were looking for a location, and it's hard to get one in Main Street. So when we saw that that location came available, we tried to get it, and we got that location. But we always look in the junction too and stuff, but there was no places, not much places available for restaurants.
So starting a new restaurant, always probably scary to do. Were you able to find enough employees and key employees, the kind of employees that had the skills you needed?
Yes, we have. We've been in town for many, many years, and we have another restaurant. So we have lots of employees that work with us during the year, the different years. And that came back now and wanted to work with us. We also, Paola's husband, that it's the chef, he's worked in different hots in town, so he knows a lot of other chefs and people that work in kitchens, so that helped. But for sure it's scary to open a restaurant and get all these people together fast, and so, when it gets so busy.
Yeah, and were you able to get fully staffed, or are you partially staffed? How did that go?
We are pretty fully staffed at the moment, so that's good. We need only one or two more people. So it helps that J1s come and they help in doing the hostess and, you know, all the people that come only for the winter.
There has been some talk that it has been difficult to get J1 employees, and it has been difficult to get employees, period, who can afford to live in the neighborhood. What are the biggest challenges you've faced in staffing up a new restaurant and holding employees at Buena Vida?
The problem, a lot of employees don't find housing around here. So I have a lot of employees that live in Heber. And when it's, the other problem is that when it storms and stuff, everybody's late and it's difficult to get to Park City. And so, I don't know. It's very difficult to live in Park City. That's true. And work in Main Street.
And some of these employees with the visas, they work in the resorts during the day. And so it works for them to come and work in a restaurant to make that extra money. Because in the past few years, even working for the resorts when there wasn't that much snow and their hours were cut, they weren't making that much money that it wasn't worth it for them to come and work here. So I think that's why that's the other problem in town right now. Not that many kids are coming because other years it wasn't worth it. The hours were cut in the resort, so
Hope there's lots of snow this year. Yes. We can put up with people being 10 or 15 minutes late because of traffic. As long as we have the demand, the tourists coming in and visiting. Yeah. Let's talk about that. How, you opened just before it got busy. How did most people find out about your restaurant?
Okay, we have a website, we have Open Table, and that really helps for reservations. So people go to our website or to Open Table website and they make the reservations. And many people go and see, okay, who has a table tonight around this and this time, and Open Table show you all the restaurants that are available. So that really helps. Then the other thing we put in the newspaper, we came to the radio. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Open Table is a tool that it's used in big cities, so people are used to using Open Table, which is a website where you make reservations for restaurants. So that helps with the tourists a lot. And then we also we talk to the concierge, and they are the ones talking to the people making reservations. We have a great relationship from our other restaurants, so that helps too with bringing people
in. Speaking of social media, how about Facebook and Yelp? How important are those?
We have Facebook and we have Yelp and we have TripAdvisor. A lot of people look at the reviews, so that really helps. And Facebook, everybody likes Facebook. I'm not a big fan of doing too much in Facebook, but we still have our website and stuff, and it's linked with Facebook. But I think the Yelp and the TripAdvisor really helps to the restaurants, because people look and read and that, and then decide, oh, I want to go or I don't want to go.
But one of the problems what we found out with that is sometimes when people are not happy, that's when they do the comments, right, instead of when they are happy, you know? So sometimes some restaurants have more negative comments than positive, and that's because when people are really mad, it's when they decide, I'm going to let everybody know about this.
Right. And when you're as busy as you probably were the last 2 weeks, you know, you do the best you can, but some things are just naturally going to fall through the cracks.
Yeah. And, you know, with the snow and everything, like we talked before, people are late, and so stay longer, and so their table is not ready because the other people stay longer, and so people don't understand sometimes, but... Yeah, we usually have good reviews, but sometimes,
Well, thanks for coming in, sisters Paola and Pamela Bello. And the new restaurant is Bodega on Main, a tapas and wine bar at 710 Main Street. Sister restaurant now to Buena Vida.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great 2016.
Thanks. Thank you. Wishes on the winter season. And thank we you. Will be back to talk about Elevated Future and the business in Park City of college prep and career advising. We'll do that when we come back.
Hi, this is Chris Cherniak. Join Nell Larson and me each Tuesday at 9 a.m. for This Green Earth, a talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. That's This Green Earth every Tuesday at 9 a.m. on KPCW.
Brought to you in part by Recycle Utah, Vail Resorts, Republic Services, and Bocholt Landscape Architecture.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Well, that was a fun conversation about tapas and wine, and we're going to switch gears and talk about a subject that's a little more serious. There's a lot of pressure on the young people in this town to get into the college of their choice. And sometimes it helps to have a coach to help you do that with it for your kids. And in studio with us is a group of people that do just that. They're with Elevated Future. We've got Brittany Schumacher, Jesse Horton, and Rachel Kleinschnitz in studio with us. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having us.
So tell us, Elevated Futures is really college application, prep, and coaching. What kind of things do you help students do?
Absolutely. So Elevated Future, we really have two arms to the company. And those two arms, one of them is the college prep side. The other is the career advising. But let's really focus on the college prep side. We like to meet students where they're at, whether they be eighth or ninth grade, and really start working with them on finding that best fit college for them. We talk about their academics. We look at their extracurriculars. And then really sit with the student and decide, okay, what is that best fit college for you, and help them in that process.
I'm actually surprised that you said eighth or ninth grade, but I'm really glad to hear that, because at that point there's still a lot that can be done too. If their dream college, if they're not prepared for that on the current track, they still have time to do something, right? Where when somebody's starting their senior year, well, the first 3 years of high school are already behind them. So what kind of things do you typically see maybe as gaps between where the kid would like to go to school and what their current experience set is?
Well, I think one thing that we really see across pretty much all of the clients that we work with, the initial gap is what the student is saying and what the parent's saying and how goals are set across both parties. And so we kind of come in and hope to kind of help bridge that gap and really formulate what those goals are, get people in line. So one thing is we'll sit down when we meet with new clients, we'll sit down with the students and the parents separately to understand, okay, what are you hoping comes out of this process to the parents? And then we ask the same question with the students, and the answers are often very different. So that's an initial hurdle that we experience when we first meet a client. But then after we feel like we really understand the student, their goals, where they'd like to see themselves going, some of the challenges they're facing getting in or thinking through where they want to go, that's when we start building out, okay, where would be the best fit college for you? We kind of use a 5-point evaluation process so that they're thinking through things like geography. Where in the country do you see yourself? How often do you want to come home? So there's so many factors in really picking that school. It's a huge financial commitment too. So helping them think through that. And then like Jess said, what are the elements that it's going to take to get into these universities?
I would think it's a good reality check too. I would imagine an eighth or ninth grader has a much higher opinion of their chances of getting into Harvard and Yale and Berkeley and all the rest. Does an eighth or ninth grader, are they mature enough to really know what they want to do for the rest of their lives?
I think with eighth and ninth grade, we really start the conversation of, well, what is college all about? And I think that's where the conversation starts. Some kids we have found are incredibly passionate about a certain track, and that's fantastic. But so many of them we find are just starting to put their toes into this conversation, and we like to be a resource there to help them navigate that conversation.
Yeah, you know, Larry, I have an eighth grader at home myself, and one of the reasons I moved here from the Bay Area, and one of the reasons I moved here 20 years ago was I did not want to raise my kids in an atmosphere that had as much pressure. I was in Palo Alto as Palo Alto did. But I'll tell you, Park City's a close second. There's a lot of pressure on these kids today. And I frankly, a lot of it's not healthy. Are you mostly dealing with the kids that are in the upper quartile academically, or are you dealing with a wide spectrum of kids?
We're really dealing with a wide spectrum. So we have kids who are just really might be lost in looking just to get into college in general. And then we do have those kids who have had their eyes set on some Ivy League institutions or some private schools or where their parents went or things like that. So we really have to address those needs for each specific student because they're so different. So, you know, one thing when we sit down with families, different than what we've seen other people do in this business, is there is no package. You know, you just can't buy a standard. If you're a junior, you get this. And if you're a sophomore, you get this. Because, like we've talked about, the needs of that particular student and where their goals are not the same goals as their peers. And like you said, it's just such a competitive environment in the high school and in such a, you know, great town with really achieving people. And so we just want to help kind of alleviate some of that pressure and focus more on not what everyone else is doing, but what that individual should be doing.
And is your advising also financial in terms of how to finance the college education once they've picked the college?
Yes. So that is a piece of that evaluation process when evaluating schools, is to really take into account the financial element, which has changed in the past few years. It's an expensive process to go to college. So we want to make sure that kind of you're getting the best bang for your buck and the return on your investment is right. So we don't want, sometimes we'll advise clients that maybe the college of their choice, because of the financial implications, might not be the best fit for them, so that they're not walking away after a 4-year degree with a huge amount of debt where they would have to take specific jobs in order to pay it off.
Although it is a double-sided coin, and we should probably share this with the audience, that families that are not high earning, a lot of the best colleges in the country are free for those kids if they can get in. So let's share some of this kind of advice for folks that maybe don't have the luxury of hiring some coaches, or give folks kind of a preview. So lower income kids that are very strong academically, you know, I would say don't let money get in the way. Don't let the tuition get in your way, because there's free money that the schools will give. Stanford, Yale, Harvard. And
that's part of our job, is we really want to help kids dig in and find those scholarships, because there's so many out there and so much free money, like you said. So helping parents and students really look into that and get applied on time and have all their stuff in line so that they're ready.
It's very different than it was 30 years ago. You know, the best schools in the country would give you a loan and you'd come out with huge amounts of student debt. And that's all changed, and it's complicated as to why it's changed. It's not all from a pure heart. There were some things colleges were lobbying to do, and they had to basically open this up, which I think is a good thing. What about, share with our audience, the importance of visiting colleges before your children are juniors. When should they be visiting colleges, and what types of things should they be doing when they're visiting colleges?
Sure. So some tips for that, and we have talked to some parents about this before. You know, financially, it can be challenging going to look at all the schools across the country that you're thinking about, too. So what we would advise parents is, as a first step, take your kids down to Salt Lake, go to Westminster, and then go to the University of Utah. Then you're having something to compare one to the other. You're seeing, what does a private institution look like? What does a private campus look like, a small school? Okay, let's go over to a big school. What does that look like? And that can kind of help direct you into what your interests are and kind of narrow the options, so that when you're taking the time to go and visit schools outside of the state, you have a little bit more direction, and you're not feeling like you have to kind of run things blind. You have, you know, a point of reference.
And Brittany, to add on to that, when you go to a campus, make sure to call and get a tour. They offer free tours consistently all of the time, as well as meeting with an admissions officer. You can ask very blunt questions, such as the financial piece. You can ask to be connected with a current student. Those types of services, schools are used to receiving those types of requests. So please go and visit the schools and ask to be connected with the admissions office and get a tour.
And it is expensive to visit these colleges. So one thing I'd add to folks, we've been taking our kids on college tours literally since they were five. While we're on vacation, when we're in Chicago, we're going to spend one day and we're going to visit the universities. When we're in Southern California, we're going to do the same thing. So it's not an additional expense just to go out and visit. Speaking of expenses, having a coach is a great thing, right? It allows you to work more efficiently and more smartly. What does it cost to use your services, and are there scholarships, or if somebody can't afford the traditional rate, are there ways that they can get access to your services as well?
Well, first of all, we're pretty transparent about our pricing, and how we like to begin our process is doing an intake interview with both the parent and the students, and then we really hone in on their specific needs, because it's not – you can't really do a package deal for each student, like we said before. So really getting to know them, and then figuring out how we can best serve them, how many hours we think they may need, so we can forecast that situation. But we do charge $85 an hour. And then, Britt, if you want to go into our scholarship thing, we have a
chance. Sure. So, like we mentioned, we do an hourly rate so that we're very transparent about the time spent on your specific student and how that time is spent. That being said, we do also have options. So if parents want to get together, if they just have some questions, or, you know, if there are some consistencies across student needs, so we're all trying to put together a resume, or we're all trying to figure out how to evaluate our schools, we can get groups of students together and offer that option as well. But you're right, it's not an inexpensive process to hire a coach, but our goal is to be very conservative with hours, very, very upfront about how we'll be spending our time, so that families are able to get the biggest bang for their buck. When we think about finances as well, a couple of things that we wanted to mention, you know, we feel strongly this was a passion business for us, and giving back to the community is really important. So we've put together with other, so I graduated from Park City High School, and there are many of us who have come back to Park City and started companies here. So we have gotten together with a few entrepreneurs that graduated from Park City High School to put together scholarships for students. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, that's a great note for us to end on. I'm glad you have an offering for everybody. Our guests this morning have been the founders of Elevate Future, Brittany Schumacher, Jess Horton, and Rachel Kleinschnitz. Thank you for coming in. It sounds like an awesome service. I'm familiar with coaches from the Bay Area. I'm glad to hear that the Park City kids have access to that.
And we'll be back for the rest of Mountain Money after this.
Final moments of Mountain Money. We want to thank our great sponsors, Mountain West Bank, Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, and All Resorts Group, and Park City.
And expecting A high of about 31 today. Chance of snow most of the week, but it's really just like a half inch, just a tease, if anything. I did see a few flurries moments ago. That's it for Mountain Money. This is KPCW, Park City.